Elaine. She turned the iron ring and pushed the door open just a crack.
Sweet Robin, she called. May I enter?
Have a care, milady, warned old Gretchel, wringing her hands. His lordship threw his chamber put at the maester.
Then he has none to throw at me. Isn't there some work you should be doing? And you, Maddie, are all the windows closed and shuttered? Have all the furnishings been covered?
All of them, milady,
said Maddie. Best make certain of it. Elaine slipped into the darkened bedchamber. It's only me, sweet Robin.
Someone sniffled in the darkness.
Are you alone?
I am, my lord.
Come close, then. Just you.
Elaine shut the door firmly behind her. It was solid oak, 4 inches thick.
Maddie and Gretchel might listen all they wished, but they would hear nothing. That was just as well. Gretchel could hold her tongue, but Maddie gossiped shamelessly.
Did Maester Coleman send you?
The boy asked. No, she lied. I heard my sweet Robin was ailing. After his encounter with the chamber pot, the maester had come running to Sir Lothar, and Brune had come to her.
If milady can talk him out of bed, nice, the knight said. I won't have to drag him out.
Oh, we can't have that, she told herself.
When Robert was handled roughly, he was apt to go into a shaking fit.
Are you hungry, my lord? She asked the little lord. Shall I send Maddie down for berries and cream, or some warm bread and butter?
Too late, she remembered that there was no warm bread. The kitchens were closed, the ovens cold.
If it gets Robert out of bed, it would be worth the bother of lighting a fire, she told herself.
I don't want food, the little lord said, in a reedy, petulant voice. I'm going to stay in bed today. You could read to me if you want.
It is too dark in here for reading.
The heavy curtains drawn across the windows made the bedchamber black as night.
Has my sweet Robin forgotten what day this is?
No,
he said,
but I'm not going. I want to stay in bed. You could read to me about the winged knight.
The winged knight was Sir Artis Erin. Legend said that he had driven the first men from the Vale and flown to the top of the giant's lance on a huge falcon to slay the Griffin King. There were 100 tales of his adventures. Little Robert knew them all so well he could have recited them from memory, but he liked to have them read to him all the same.
Sweetling, we have to go, she told the boy. But I promise I'll read you 2 tales of the winged knight when we reach the gates of the moon.
3,
he said at once. No matter what you offered him, Robert always wanted more.
3, she agreed.
Might I let some sun in? No, the light hurts my eyes. Come to bed, Elaine.
She went to the windows anyway, edging round the broken chamber pot. She could smell it better than she saw it.
I shan't open them very wide, only enough to see my sweet Robin's face.
He sniffled.
If you must.
The curtains were of plush blue velvet. She pulled one back a finger's length and tied it off. Dust motes danced in a shaft of pale morning light. The small diamond-shaped panes of the window were obscured by frost. Elaine rubbed at one with the heel of her hand, enough to glimpse a brilliant blue sky and a blaze of white from the mountainside. The area was wrapped in an icy mantle, the giant's lance above buried in waist-deep snows. When she turned back, Robert Aaron was propped up against the pillows, looking at her.
The Lord of the Eyrie and Defender of the Vale.
A woolen blanket covered him below the waist. Above it he was naked. A pasty boy with hair as long as any girl's. Robert had spindly arms and legs, a soft concave chest and little belly, and eyes that were always red and runny.
He cannot help the way he is. He was born small and sickly.
You look very strong this morning, my lord.
He loved to be told how strong he was. Shall I have Maddie and Gretchel fetch hot water for your bath? Maddie will scrub your back for you and wash your hair to make you clean and lordly for your journey. Won't that be nice?
No, I hate Maddie. She has a wart on her eye, and she scrubs so hard it hurts. My mummy never hurt me scrubbing.
I will tell Maddie not to scrub my sweet Robin so hard. You'll feel better when you're fresh and clean.
No, bath. I told you my head hurts most awfully.
Shall I bring you a warm cloth for your brow, or a cup of dream wine? Only a little one, though. Maya Stone is waiting down at Sky, and she'll be hurt if you go to sleep on her. You know how much she loves you.
I don't love her. She's just the mule girl.
Robert sniffled.
Maester Coleman put something vile in my milk last night. I could taste it. I told him I wanted sweet milk, but he wouldn't bring me any, not even when I commanded him. I am the Lord. He should do what I say. No one does what I say.
I'll speak to him, Elaine promised. But only if you get up out of bed. It's beautiful outside, sweet Robin. The sun is shining bright, a perfect day for going down the mountain. The mules are waiting down at Sky with Maya. His mouth quivered.
I hate those smelly mules. One tried to bite me once. You tell that Maya that I'm staying here.
He sounded as if he were about to cry.
No one can hurt me so long as I stay here. The airy is impregnable.
Who would want to hurt my sweet Robin? Your lords and knights adore you, and the small folk cheer your name. He is afraid, she thought, and with good reason. Since his lady mother had fallen, the boy would not even stand upon a balcony, and the way from the airy to the gates of the moon was perilous enough to daunt anyone. Elaine's heart had been in her throat when she made her own ascent with Lady Lysa and Lord Peter, and everyone agreed that the descent was even more harrowing, since you were looking down the whole time. Maya could tell of great lords and bold knights who had gone pale and wet their small clothes on the mountain, and none of them had the shaking sickness either. Still, it would not serve. On the valley floor, autumn still lingered, warm and golden, but winter had closed around the mountain peaks. They had weathered three snowstorms and an ice storm that transformed the castle into crystal for a fortnight. The area might be impregnable, but it would soon be inaccessible as well, and the way down grew more hazardous every day. Most of the castle's servants and soldiers had already made the descent. Only a dozen still lingered up here to attend Lord Robert. "Sweet Robin," she said gently, "the descent will be ever so jolly, you'll see. Sir Lothar will be with us, and Maya. Her mules have gone up and down this old mountain 1,000 times.
"I hate mules," he insisted. "Mules are nasty. I told you, one tried to bite me when I was little."
Robert had never learned to ride properly, she knew. Mules, horses, donkeys, it made no matter. To him they were all fearsome beasts, as terrifying as dragons or griffins. He had been brought to the Vale at 6, riding with his head cradled between his mother's milky breasts, and had never left the airy since. Still, they had to go, before the ice closed about the castle, for good. There was no telling how long the weather would hold.
"Maya will keep the mules from biting," Elaine said, "and I'll be riding just behind you. I'm only a girl, not as brave or strong as you. If I can do it, I know you can, sweet Robin."
"I could do it," Lord Robert said, "but I don't choose to."
He swiped at his runny nose with the back of his hand.
"Tell Maya I'm going to stay abed. Perhaps I will come down on the morrow if I feel better. Today is too cold out and my head hurts. You can have some sweet milk too, and I'll tell Gretchel to bring us some honeycombs to eat. We'll sleep and kiss and play games, and you can read me about the winged knight."
I will. Three tails, as I promised. When we reach the gates of the moon. Elaine was running short of patience.
We have to go, she reminded herself, or we'll still be above the snow line when the sun goes down.
Lord Nestor has prepared a feast to welcome you. Mushroom soup and venison and cakes. You don't want to disappoint him, do you?
Will they be lemon cakes?
Lord Robert loved lemon cakes, perhaps because Elaine did.
Lemony, lemony lemon cakes, she assured him, and you can have as many as you like.
100,
he wanted to know.
Could I have 100?
If it please you.
She sat on the bed and smoothed his long, fine hair.
He does have pretty hair.
Lady Lysa had brushed it herself every night and cut it when it wanted cutting. After she had fallen, Robert had suffered terrible shaking fits whenever anyone came near him with a blade. So Peter had commanded that his hair be allowed to grow. Elaine wound a lock around her finger and said, "Now will you get out of bed and let us dress you?"
"I want 100 lemon cakes and 5 tails."
"I'd like to give you 100 spankings and 5 slaps. You would not dare behave like this if Peter was here."
The little lord had a good, healthy fear of his stepfather. Elaine forced a smile.
"As my lord desires, but nothing till you've washed and dressed and on your way. Come, before the morning's gone."
She took him firmly by the hand and drew him out of bed. Before she could summon the servants, however, Sweet Robin threw his skinny arms around her and kissed her. It was a little boy's kiss, and clumsy. Everything Robert Aaron did was clumsy.
"If I close my eyes, I can pretend he is the Knight of Flowers."
Solaris had given Sansa Stark a red rose once, but he had never kissed her. And no Tyrell would ever kiss Elaine Stone. Pretty as she was, she had been born on the wrong side of the blanket. As the boy's lips touched her own, she found herself thinking of another kiss. She could still remember how it felt when his cruel mouth pressed down on her own. He had come to Sansa in the darkness as green fire filled the sky. "He took a song and a kiss and left me nothing but a bloody cloak." It made no matter. The day was done and so was Sansa. Elaine pushed her little lord away.
"That's enough. You can kiss me again when we reach the gates, if you keep your word."
Maddie and Gretchel were waiting outside with Maester Coleman. The maester had washed the night soil from his hair and changed his robe. Robert Squires had turned up as well. Terence and Giles could always sniff out trouble.
"Lord Robert is feeling stronger," Elaine told the serving women. "Fetch hot water for his bath. But see you do not scald him, and do not pull on his hair when you brush out the tangles. He hates that."
One of the squires sniggered, until she said, "Terence, lay out his lordship's riding clothes and his warmest cloak. Giles, you may clean up that broken chamber pot." Giles Grafton made a face.
"I'm no scrubwoman.
Do as Lady Elaine commands, or Lothar Brune will hear of it,"
said Maester Coleman. He followed her along the hallway down the twisting stairs.
"I am grateful for your intercession, my lady. You have a way with him."
He hesitated.
"Did you observe any shaking while you were with him?"
"His fingers trembled a little bit when I held his hand, that's all. He says you put something vile in his milk."
"Vile?"
Coleman blinked at her, and the apple in his throat moved up and down.
I merely... Is he bleeding from the nose?"
"No."
"Good, that is good."
His chain clinked softly as he bobbed his head atop a ridiculous long and skinny neck.
"This descent, my lady, it might be safest if I mixed his lordship some milk of the poppy. Mirestone could lash him over the back of her most sure-footed mule whilst he slumbered."
"The Lord of the Eyrie cannot descend from his mountain, tied up like a sack of barleycorn."
Of that Elaine was certain.
They dare not let the full extent of Robert's frailty and cowardice become too widely known. Her father had warned her.
I wish you were here. He would know what to do.
Peter Baelish was clear across the vale, though, attending Lord Lionel Corbury at his wedding. A widower of 40-odd years and childless, Lord Lionel was to wed the strapping 16-year-old daughter of a rich Gulltown merchant. Peter had brokered the match himself. The bride's dower was said to be staggering. It had to be, since she was of common birth. Corbury's vassals would be there, with the Lords Waxley, Grafton, Linderley, some petty lords and landed knights, and Lord Belmore, who had lately reconciled with her father. The other lords declarant were expected to shun the nuptials, so Peter's presence was essential. Elaine understood all that well enough, but it meant that the burden of getting Sweet Robin safely down the mountain fell on her.
"Give his lordship a cup of sweet milk," she told the maester. "That will stop him from shaking on the journey down."
"He had a cup not 3 days past," Coleman objected.
"And wanted another last night, which you refused him."
"It was too soon. My lady, you do not understand. As I've told the Lord Protector, a pinch of sweet sleep will prevent the shaking, but it does not leave the flesh. And in time—"
"Time will not matter if his lordship has a shaking fit and falls off the mountain. If my father were here, I know he would tell you to keep Lord Robert calm at all costs."
"I try, my lady, yet his fits grow ever more violent, and his blood is so thin I dare not leech him any more. Sweet sleep, you are certain that he was not bleeding from the nose?"
"He was sniffling," Elaine admitted, "but I saw no blood."
"I must speak to the Lord Protector. This feast, is that wise, I wonder, after the strain of the descent?"
"It will not be a large feast," she assured him. "No more than 40 guests. Lord Nestor and his household, the Knight of the Gate, a few lesser lords and their retainers."
"Lord Robert mislikes strangers, you know that, and there will be drinking, noise, music." "Music frightens him."
"Music soothes him," she corrected. "The high harp especially. It's singing he can't abide since Marillion killed his mother."
Elaine had told the lie so many times that she remembered it that way more often than not. The other seemed no more than a bad dream that sometimes troubled her sleep.
"Lord Nestor will have no singers at the feast, only flutes and fiddles for the dancing."
What would she do when the music began to play? It was a vexing question, to which her heart and head gave different answers. Sansa loved to dance, but Elaine... "Just give him a cup of the sweet milk before we go, and another at the feast, and there should be no trouble."
"Very well."
They paused at the foot of the stairs.
"But this must be the last for half a year or longer."
"You had best take that up with the Lord Protector." She pushed through the door and crossed the yard. Coleman only wanted what was best for his charge, Elaine knew. But what was best for Robert the boy and what was best for Lord Aaron were not always the same. Peter had said as much, and it was true.
"Maester Coleman cares only for the boy, though. Father and I have larger concerns."
Old snow cloaked the courtyard, and icicles hung down like crystal spears from the terraces and towers. The area was built of fine white stone, and winter's mantle made it whiter still.
"So beautiful," Elaine thought, "so impregnable."
She could not love this place, no matter how she tried. Even before the guards and serving men had made their descent, the castle had seemed as empty as a tomb, and more so when Peter Baelish was away. No one sang up there, not since Marillion. No one ever laughed too loud. Even the guards were silent. The Aerie boasted a sept, but no septon. A godswood, but no heart tree.
"No prayers are answered here,"
she often thought, though some days she felt so lonely she had to try.
Only the wind answered her, sighing endlessly around the 7 slim white towers and rattling the moon door every time it gusted.
It will be even worse in winter, she knew. In winter, this will be a cold, white prison.
And yet the thought of leaving frightened her almost as much as it frightened Robert. She only hid it better. Her father said there was no shame in being afraid, only in showing your fear. All men live with fear, he said. Elaine was not certain she believed that. Nothing frightened Peter Baelish.
He only said that to make me brave.
She would need to be brave down below, where the chance of being unmasked was so much greater. Peter's friends at court had sent him word that the Queen had men out looking for the imp and Sansa Stark.
It will mean my head if I am found, she reminded herself as she descended a flight of icy stone steps. I must be Elaine all the time, inside and out.
Lertha Brune was in the winch room, helping the jailer, Maud, and 2 serving men wrestle chests of clothes and bales of cloth into 6 huge oaken buckets, each big enough around to hold 3 men. The great chain winches were the easiest way to reach the Waycastle sky, 600 feet below them. Elsewise, you had to descend the natural stone chimney from the undercellar, or go the way Marillion went, and Lady Lysa before him.
Boy out of bed?
Sir Lothar asked. They're bathing him. He will be ready within the hour.
We best hope he is. Maya won't wait past midday.
The winch room was unheated, so his breath misted with every word.
She'll wait, Elaine said. She has to wait.
Don't be so certain, my lady. She's half-mule herself, that one. I think she'd leave us all to starve before she'd put those animals at risk.
He smiled when he said it.
He always smiles when he speaks of Maya Stone.
Maya was much younger than Sir Lothar, but when her father had been brokering the marriage between Lord Gorbrey and his merchant's daughter, he told her that young girls were always happiest with older men.
Innocence and experience makes for a perfect marriage, he had said.
Elaine wondered what Maya made of Sir Lothar, with his squash nose, square jaw, and nap of woolly grey hair. Brune could not be called comely, but he was not ugly either.
It is a common face, but an honest one.
Though he had risen to knighthood, Sir Lothar's birth had been very low. One night he had told her that he was kin to the Brunes of Brown Hollow, an old knightly family from Crackclaw Point.
I went to them when my father died, he confessed, but they shat on me and said I was no blood of theirs.
He would not speak of what happened after that, except to say that he had learned all he knew of arms the hard way. Sober, he was a quiet man, but a strong one.
And Peter says he's loyal. He trusts him as much as he trusts anyone.
Brune would be a good match for a bastard girl like Maya Stone, she thought.
It might be different if her father had acknowledged her, but he never did. And Maddie says she's no maid either.
Maud took up his whip and cracked it, and the first pair of oxen began to lumber in a circle, turning the winch. The chain uncoiled, rattling as it scraped across the stone, the oaken bucket swaying as it began its long descent to sky.
Poor oxen, thought Elaine.
Maud would cut their throats and butcher them before he left, and leave them for the falcons. Whatever part remained when the area was reopened would be roasted up for the spring feast, if it had not spoiled. A good supply of hard frozen meat foretold a summer of plenty, old Gretchel claimed.
"Milady," Sir Lothar said, "you'd best know. Meyer didn't come up alone. Lady Miranda's with her."
"Oh, why would she ride all the way up the mountain just to ride back down again?"
Miranda Royce was Lord Nestor's daughter. The one time that Sansa had visited the Gates of the Moon
on the way up to the Eyrie, with her Aunt Lysa and Lord Peter, she had been away. But Elaine had heard much of her since, from the Eyrie soldiers and serving girls. Her mother was long dead, so Lady Miranda kept her father's castle for him. It was a much livelier court when she was home than when she was away, according to rumour. "Soon or late, you must meet Miranda Royce," Peter had warned her. "When you do, be careful. She likes to play the merry fool, but underneath, oh, she's shrewder than her father. Guard your tongue around her." "I will," she thought, "but I did not know I'd need to start so soon. Robert will be pleased." He liked Miranda Royce. "You must excuse me, sir. I need to finish packing." Alone, she climbed the steps back to her room for one last time. The windows had been sealed and shuttered, the furnishings covered. A few of her things had already been removed, the rest stored away. All of Lady Lysa's silks and samites were to be left behind. Her sheerest linens and plushest velvets, the rich embroidery and fine mirish lace, all would remain. Down below, Elaine must dress modestly, as befit a girl of modest birth. "It makes no matter," she told herself. "I dare not wear the best clothes even here." Gretchel had stripped the bed and laid out the rest of her clothing. Elaine was already wearing woolen hose beneath her skirts over a double layer of small clothes. Now she donned a wool's lamb over tunic and a hooded fur cloak, fastening it with an enameled mockingbird that had been a gift from Peter. There was a scarf as well and a pair of leather gloves lined with fur to match her riding boots. When she'd donned it all, she felt as fat and furry as a bear cub. "I will be glad of it on the mountain," she had to remind herself. She took one last look at her room before she left. "I was safe here," she thought, "but down below..." When Elaine returned to the winch room, she found Milestone waiting impatiently with Lothar Brune and Maud. She must have come up in the bucket to see what was taking her so long. Slim and sinewy, Maya looked as tough as the old riding leathers she wore beneath her silvery ringmail shirt. Her hair was black as a raven's wing, so short and shaggy that Elaine suspected that she cut it with a dagger. Maya's eyes were her best feature, big and blue. She could be pretty if she would dress up like a girl. Elaine found herself wondering whether Sir Lothar liked her best in her iron and leather, or dreamed of her gowned in lace and silk. Maya liked to say that her father had been a goat and her mother an owl, but Elaine had gotten the true story from Mary. "Yes," she thought, looking at her now, "those are his eyes, and she has his hair, too, the thick black hair he shared with Renly."
"Where is he?"
the bastard girl demanded. "His lordship is being bathed and dressed."
"He needs to make some haste. It's getting colder. Can't you feel it? We need to get below snow before the sun goes down."
"How bad is the wind?" Elaine asked her.
"It could be worse. It will be after dark."
Maya pushed a lock of hair from her eyes.
"If he bathes much longer, we'll be trapped up here all winter, with nothing to eat except each other."
Elaine did not know what to say to that. Thankfully, she was spared by the arrival of Robert Aaron. The little lord wore sky-blue velvet, a chain of gold and sapphires, and a white bearskin cloak. His squires each held an end, to keep the cloak from dragging on the floor. Maester Coleman accompanied them in a threadbare grey cloak lined with squirrel fur. Gretchel and Madley were not far behind. When he felt the cold wind on his face, Robert quailed, but Terence and Giles were behind him, so he could not flee.
"My lord," said Maya, "will you ride down with me?"
Too brusque, Elaine thought. She should have greeted him with a smile, told him how strong and brave he looks.
"I want Elaine," Lord Robert said. "I'll only go with her." The bucket can hold all three of us. I just want Elaine. You smell all stinky, like a mule.
As you wish.
Maya's face showed no emotion. Some of the winch chains were fixed to wicker baskets, others to stout oaken buckets. The largest of these was taller than Elaine, with iron bands girding its dark bronze staves. Even so, her heart was in her throat as she took Robert's hand and helped him in. Once the hatch was closed behind them, the wood surrounded them on all sides. Only the top was open.
It is best that way, she told herself. We can't look down. Below them was only sky and sky. 600 feet of sky. For a moment she found herself wondering how long it had taken her aunt to fall that distance, and what her last thought had been as the mountain rushed up to meet her. No, I mustn't think of that. I mustn't.
Away!
Came Sir Lothar's shout. Someone shoved the bucket hard. It swayed and tipped, scraped against the floor, then swung free. She heard the crack of Mort's whip and the rattle of the chain. They began to descend, by jerks and starts at first, then more smoothly. Robert's face was pale, and his eyes puffy, but his hands were still. The air shrank above them. The sky cells on the lower levels made the castle look something like a honeycomb from below.
A honeycomb made of ice,
Elaine thought.
A castle made of snow.
She could hear the wind whistling round the bucket. 100 feet down, a sudden gust caught hold of them. The bucket swayed sideways, spinning in the air, then bumped hard against the rock face behind them. Shards of ice and snow rained down on them, and the oak creaked and strained. Robert gave a gasp and clung to her, burying his face between her breasts.
"My lord is brave," Elaine said, when she felt him shaking. "I'm so frightened I can hardly talk, but not you."
She felt him nod.
"The winged knight was brave, and so am I,"
he boasted to her bodice.
"I am an Aaron."
"Will my sweet Robin hold me tight?"
she asked, though he was already holding her so tightly that she could scarcely breathe.
"If you like," he whispered,
and clinging hard to one another, they continued on straight down to sky.
"Calling this a castle is like calling a puddle on a privy floor a lake,"
Elaine thought, when the bucket was opened so they might emerge within the Way Castle. Sky was no more than a crescent-shaped wall of old unmortared stone enclosing a stony ledge and the yawning mouth of a cavern. Inside were storehouses and stables, a long natural hall, and the chiselled handholds that led up to the eyrie. Outside, the ground was strewn by broken stones and boulders. Earthen ramps gave access to the wall. 600 feet above, the eyrie was so small she could hide it with her hand, but far below, the veil stretched green and golden. 20 mules awaited them within the Way Castle, along with 2 mule walkers and the Lady Miranda Royce. Lord Nestor's daughter proved to be a short, fleshy woman, of an age with Maya Stone. But where Maya was slim and sinewy, Miranda was soft-bodied and sweet-smelling, broad of hip, thick of waist, and extremely buxom. Her thick chestnut curls framed round her red cheeks, a small mouth, and a pair of lively brown eyes. When Robert climbed gingerly from the bucket, she knelt in a patch of snow to kiss his hand and cheeks.
"My lord," she said, "you've grown so big."
"Have I?" said Robert, pleased.
"You will be taller than me soon,"
the lady lied. She got to her feet and brushed the snow from her skirts.
"And you must be the Lord Protector's daughter," she added, as the bucket went rattling back up to the eyrie. "I heard that you were beautiful."
"I see that it is true,"
Elaine curtsies.
"Oh, my lady is kind to say so."
"Kind? Oh,"
the older girl gave a laugh. "How boring that would be. I aspire to be wicked.
You must tell me all your secrets on the ride down. May I call you Elaine?
If you wish, my lady. But you'll get no secrets from me.
I am, my lady, at the gates, but up here, on the mountain, you may call me Randa. How many years have you, Elaine?
4 and 10, my lady.
She had decided that Elaine Stone should be older than Sansa Stark.
Randa. It seems 100 years since I was 4 and 10. How innocent I was.
Are you still innocent, Elaine?
She blushed.
You should not.
Yes, of course.
Saving yourself for Lord Robert, Lady Miranda teased. Or is it some ardent squire dreaming of your favours?
No, said Elaine. Even as Robert said,
she's my friend. Terence and Jaws can't have her.
A second bucket had arrived by then, thumping down softly on a mound of frozen snow. Maester Coleman emerged with the squires Terence and Giles. The next winch delivered Maddy and Gretchel, who rode with Maya Stone. The bastard girl wasted no time taking charge. "We don't want to get bunched up on the mountains," she told the other mule handlers. "I'll take Lord Robert and his companions. Ozzy, you bring down Sir Lothar and the rest, but give me an hour's lead. Carrot, you have charge of their chests and boxes." She turned to Robert Aaron, her black hair blowing. "Which mule will you ride today, my lord?"
"They're all stinky. I'll have the grey one with the ear chewed off. I want Elaine to ride with me, and Miranda too."
"Where the way is wide enough. Come, my lord, let's get you on your mule. There's a smell of snow in the air." It was another half hour before they were ready to set out. When all of them were mounted up, Maya Stone gave a crisp command, and two of Skye's men-at-arms swung the gates open. Maya led them out, with Lord Robert just behind her, swaddled in his bearskin cloak. Elaine and Miranda Royce followed, then Gretchel and Maddy, then Terence Linderley and Giles Grafton. Maester Coleman brought up the rear, leading a second mule laden with his chests of herbs and potions. Beyond the walls, the wind picked up sharply. They were above the tree line here, exposed to the elements. Elaine was thankful that she'd dressed so warmly. Her cloak was flapping noisily behind her, and a sudden gust blew back her hood. She laughed, but a few yards ahead, Lord Robert squirmed and said,
"It's too cold. We should go back and wait until it's warmer."
"It will be warmer on the valley floor, my lord," said Maya. "You see when we get down there."
"I don't want to see," said Robert,
but Maya paid no mind. Their road was a crooked series of stone steps carved into the mountainside, but the mules knew every inch of it. Elaine was glad of that. Here and there the stone was shattered from the strain of countless seasons, with all their thaws and freezes. Patches of snow clung to the rock on either side of the path, blinding white. The sun was bright, the sky was blue, and there were falcons circling overhead, riding on the wind. Up here, where the slope was steepest, the steps wound back and forth rather than plunging straight down. Sansa Stark went up the mountain, but Elaine Stone is coming down. It was a strange thought. Coming up, Maya had warned her to keep her eyes on the path ahead, she remembered. "Look up, not down," she said, but that was not possible on the descent. "I could close my eyes. The mule knows the way. He has no need of me." But that seems something more Sansa would have done. That frightened girl. Elaine was an older woman, and bastard brave. At first they rode in single file, but farther down the path widened enough for two to ride abreast, and Miranda Royce came up beside her. "We have had a letter from your father," she said, as casually as if they were sitting with their scepter doing needlework. "He is on his way home, he says, and hopes to see his darling daughter soon. He writes that Lionel Corbury seems well pleased with his bride, and even more so with her dowry. I do hope Lord Lionel remembers which one he needs to bed. Lady Waynewood
turned up with a knight of 9 stars for the wedding feast, Lord Peter says, to everyone's astonishment.
Anya Wainwood, truly. The Lord's declarant were down from 6 to 3, it would seem. The day he'd departed the mountain, Peter Baelish had been confident of winning Simon Templeton to his side. But not so Lady Wainwood.
Was there more? She asked.
The area was such a lonely place that she was eager for any bit of news from the world beyond, however trivial or insignificant.
Not from your father, no, but we've had other birds. The war goes on everywhere but here. River Run has yielded, but Dragonstone and Storm's End still hold for Lord Stannis.
Lady Lysa was so wise to keep us out of it. Miranda gave her a shrewd little smile.
Yes, she was the very soul of wisdom, that good lady.
She shifted her seat.
Why must mules be so bony and ill-tempered? Maya does not feed them enough. A nice fat mule would be more comfortable to ride.
There's a new High Septon, did you know?
Oh, and the Night's Watch has a boy commander, some bastard son of Eddard Stark's.
Jon Snow? She blurted out, surprised.
Snow, yes, it would be Snow, I suppose.
She had not thought of Jon in ages. He was only her half-brother, but still, with Rob and Bran and Rickon dead, Jon Snow was the only brother that remained to her. I'm a bastard too now, just like him. Oh, it would be so sweet to see him once again. But of course that could never be. Elaine Stone had no brothers, base-born or otherwise. Our cousin Bronzion had himself a melee at Runestone, Miranda Royce went on, oblivious. A small one, just for squires. It was meant for Harry the heir to win his honours, and so he did. Harry the heir, Lady Wainwood's ward, Harold Harding. I suppose we must call him Sir Harry now. Bronzion knighted him. Oh. Elaine was confused. Why should Lady Wainwood's ward be her heir? She had sons of her own blood. One was the knight of the Bloody Gate, Sir Donald. She did not want to look stupid, though, so all she said was, I pray he proves a worthy knight. Lady Miranda snorted.
I pray he gets the pox. He has a bastard daughter by some common girl, you know. My lord father had hoped to marry me to Harry, but Lady Wainwood would not hear of it. I do not know whether it was me she found unsuitable or just my dowry.
She gave a sigh.
I do need another husband. I had one once, but I killed him.
You did? Elaine said, shocked.
Oh, yes. He died on top of me. In me, if truth be told. You do know what goes on in a marriage bed, I hope.
She thought of Tyrion and of the Hound and how he'd kissed her, and gave a nod. That must have been dreadful, my lady. Him dying there, I mean, whilst he was fucking me, she shrugged. It was disconcerting, certainly, not to mention discourteous. He did not even have the common decency to plant a child in me. All men have weak seed, so here I am, a widow, but scarce used.
Harry could have done much worse. Oh, I dare say he will. Lady Wainwood would most like marry him to one of her granddaughters, or one of Bronzion's.
As you say, my lady. Elaine remembered Peter's warning.
Randa, come now, you can say it. Randa.
Randa.
Much better. I fear I must apologise to you. You will think me a dreadful slut, I know. But I bedded that pretty boy, Marillion. I did not know he was a monster. He sang beautifully and could do the sweetest things with his fingers. I would never have taken him to bed if I'd known he was going to push Lady Lysa through the moon door. I do not bed monsters, as a rule. She studied Elaine's face and chest. You are prettier than me, but my breasts are larger. The maesters say large breasts produce no more milk than small ones, but I do not believe it. Have you ever known a wet nurse with small teats? Yours are ample for a girl your age, but they are bastard breasts. I shan't concern myself with them.
Miranda edged her mule closer.
You know, our Maya's not a maid, I trust.
She did. Fat Maddie had whispered it to her one time when Maya brought up their supplies.
Maddie, tell me.
Of course she did. She has a mouth as big as her thighs. And her thighs are enormous. Michael Redfort was the one. He used to be Lynn Corbury's squire, a real squire. Not like that loutish lad Sir Lynn's got squiring for him now. He only took that one on for coin, they say. Michael was the best young swordsman in the Vale, and gallant, or so poor Maya thought, till he wed one of Brunsjon's daughters. Lord Orton gave him no choice in the matter, I'm sure, but it was still a cruel thing to do to Maya.
Sir Lothar is fond of her. Elaine glanced down at the mule girl 20 steps below. More than fond.
Lothar Brune?
Miranda raised an eyebrow.
Does she know?
She did not wait for an answer.
He has no hope, poor man. My father's tried to make a match for Maya, but she'll have none of them. She's half mule, that one.
Despite herself, Elaine found herself warming to the older girl. She had not had a friend to gossip with since poor old Jane Poole. Do you think Sir Lothar likes her, as she is, in mail and leather? She asked the older girl, who seemed so worldly wise, or does he dream of her draped in silks and velvets?
He's a man. He dreams of her naked.
She's trying to make me blush again. Lady Miranda must have heard her thoughts.
You do turn such a pretty shade of pink. When I blush, I look like an apple. I've not blushed for years, though.
She leaned closer.
Does your father plan to wed again?
My father? Elaine had never considered that. Somehow the notion made her squirm. She found herself remembering the look on Lysa Aaron's face as she tumbled through the moon door.
"We all know how devoted he was to Lady Lysa," said Miranda. "But he cannot mourn forever. He needs a pretty young wife to wash away his grief. I imagine he could have his pick of half the noble maidens in the Vale. Who could be a better husband than our own bold Lord Protector? Though I do wish he had a better name than Littlefinger. How little is it, do you know?"
"His finger?" She blushed again. I never... Lady Miranda laughed so loud that Maya Stone glanced back at them.
"Never you mind, Elaine. I'm sure it's large enough."
They passed beneath a wind-carved arch, where long icicles clung to the pale stone, dripping down on them. On the far side the path narrowed and plunged down sharply for 100 feet or more. Miranda was forced to drop back. Elaine gave the mule his head. The steepness of this part of the descent made her cling tightly to her saddle. The steps here had been worn smooth by the iron-shod hooves of all the mules who'd passed this way, until they resembled a series of shallow stone bowls. Water filled the bottom of the bowls, glimmering golden in the afternoon sun.
"It is water now," Elaine thought, "but come dark, all of it will turn to ice."
She realized that she was holding her breath and let it out. Maya Stone and Lord Robert had almost reached the ruck spire where the slope leveled off again. She tried to look at them, and only them.
"I will not fall," she told herself. "Maya's mule will see me through."
The wind skirled around her as she bumped and scraped her way down step by step. It seemed to take a lifetime. Then all at once she was at the bottom, with Maya and her little lord huddled beneath a twisted, rocky spire. Ahead stretched a high stone saddle, narrow and icy. Elaine could hear the wind shrieking and feel it plucking at her cloak. She remembered this place from her ascent. It had frightened her then, and it frightened her now.
"It is wider than it looks,"
Maya was telling Lord Robert in a cheerful voice.
"A yard across and no more than 8 yards long. That's nothing."
Nothing,
Robert said. His hand was shaking.
"Oh, no," Elaine thought. "Please, not here, not now."
"It's best to lead the mules across," Maya said. "If it please my lord, I'll take mine over first, then come back for yours." Lord Robert did not answer. He was staring at the narrow saddle with his reddened eyes.
"I shan't be long, my lord," Maya promised, but Elaine doubted that the boy could even hear her.
When the bastard girl led her mule out from beneath the shelter of the spire, the wind caught her in its teeth. Her cloak lifted, twisting and flapping in the air. Maya staggered, and for half a heartbeat it seemed as if she would be blown over the precipice. But somehow she regained her balance and went on. Elaine took Robert's gloved hand in her own to stop his shaking.
"Sweet Robin," she said, "I'm scared. Hold my hand and help me get across. I know you're not afraid."
He looked at her, his pupils small, dark pinpricks and eyes as big and white as eggs.
"I'm not." "No, not you. You're my winged knight, Sir Sweet Robin." "The winged knight could fly," Robert whispered, "higher than the mountains." She gave his hand a squeeze.
Lady Miranda had joined them by the spire.
"He could," she echoed,
when she saw what was happening.
"Sir Sweet Robin,"
Lord Robert said, and Elaine knew that she dare not wait for Maya to return. She helped the boy dismount, and hand in hand they walked out onto the bare stone saddle, their cloaks snapping and flapping behind them. All around was empty air and sky, the ground falling away sharply to either side. There was ice underfoot, and broken stones just waiting to turn an ankle. And the wind was howling fiercely.
"It sounds like a wolf," thought Sansa. "A ghost wolf, big as mountains."
And then they were on the other side, and Maya Stern was laughing and lifting Robert for a hug.
"Be careful," Elaine told her. "He can hurt you, flailing. You wouldn't think so, but he can."
They found a place for him, a cleft in the rock to keep him out of the cold wind. Elaine tended him until the shaking passed, whilst Maya went back to help the others across. Fresh mules awaited them at Snow, and a hot meal of stewed goat and onions. She ate with Maya and Miranda.
"So you're brave as well as beautiful," Miranda said to her.
"No." The compliment made her blush. "I'm not. I was so scared. I don't think I could have crossed without Lord Robert." She turned to Maya Stone. "You almost fell."
"You're mistaken. I never fall."
Maya's hair had tumbled across her cheek, hiding one eye.
"Almost," I said. "I saw you. Weren't you afraid?"
Maya shook her head. "I remember a man throwing me in the air when I was very little. He stands as tall as the sky, and he throws me up so high it feels as though I'm flying. We're both laughing, laughing so much that I can hardly catch a breath. And finally, I laugh so hard, I wet myself. But that only makes him laugh the louder. I was never afraid when he was throwing me. I knew he would always be there to catch me." She pushed her hair back. "Then one day, he wasn't. Men come and go. They lie or die or leave you. A mountain is not a man, though, and a stone is a mountain's daughter. I trust my father, and I trust my mules. I won't fall."
She put her hand on a jagged spur of rock and got to her feet.
"Best finish. We have a long way yet to go, and I can smell a storm."
The snow began to fall as they were leaving Stone, the largest and lowest of the three waycastles that defended the approaches to the Eyrie. Dusk was settling by then. Lady Miranda suggested that perhaps they might turn back, spend the night at Stone, and resume their descent when the sun came up. But Maya would not hear of it. The snow might be 5 feet deep by then, and the steps treacherous even for my mules, she said. "We will do better to press on. We'll take it slow." And so they did. Below Stone, the steps were broader and less steep, winding in and out of the tall pines and grey-green sentinels that cloaked the lower steps of the Giant's Lance. Maya's mules knew every root and rock on the way down, it seemed, and any they forgot, the bastard girl remembered. Half the night was gone before they sighted the lights of the Gates of the Moon through the falling snow. The last part of their journey was the most peaceful. The snow fell steadily, cloaking all the world in white. Sweet Robin drifted to sleep in the saddle, swaying back and forth with the motion of his mule. Even Lady Miranda began to yawn and complain of being weary.
"We have apartments prepared for all of you," she told Elaine. "But if you like, you may share my bed tonight. It's large enough for four."
"I should be honoured, my lady."
"Randa, count yourself fortunate that I am so tired. All I want to do is curl up and go to sleep. Usually when ladies share my bed, they have to pay a pillow tax and tell me all about the wicked things they've done."
"What if they haven't done any wicked things?"
"Why, then they must confess all the wicked things they want to do. Not you, of course. I can see how virtuous you are just by looking at those rosy cheeks and big blue eyes of yours."
She yawned again.
I hope your feet are warm. I do hate bedmaids with cool feet."
By the time they finally reached her father's castle, Lady Miranda was drowsing too, and Elaine was dreaming of her hot bed. "It will be a feather bed," she told herself. "Soft and warm and deep, piled high with furs. I will dream a sweet dream, and when I wake there will be dogs barking, women gossiping beside the well, swords ringing in the yard, and later there will be a feast with music and dancing." After the deadly silence of the Eyrie, she yearned for shouts and laughter. As the riders were climbing off their mules, however, one of Peter's guardsmen emerged from within the keep.
"Lady Elaine," he said, "the Lord Protector has been waiting for you."
"His back?" she said, startled.
"At evenfall. You'll find him in the West Tower."
The hour was closer to dawn than to dusk, and most of the castle was asleep, but not Peter Baelish. Elaine found him seated by a crackling fire, drinking hot mulled wine with three men she did not know. They all rose when she entered, and Peter smiled warmly.
"Elaine, come give your father a kiss."
She hugged him dutifully and kissed him on the cheek. "I'm sorry to intrude, father. No one told me you had company."
"You're never an intrusion, sweetling. I was just telling these good knights what a dutiful daughter I had."
"Dutiful and beautiful,"
said an elegant young knight whose thick blonde mane cascaded down well past his shoulders.
"Oi,"
said the second knight, a burly fellow with a thick salt and pepper beard, a red nose, bulbous, with broken veins, and gnarled hands as large as hams.
"You left out that part, my lord."
"I would do the same if she were my daughter," said the last knight, a short, wiry man with a wry smile, pointed nose and bristly orange hair, "particularly around louts like us."
Elaine laughed. "Are you louts?" she said, teasing. "Why, I took the three of you for gallant knights."
"Knights they are," said Peter. "Their gallantry has yet to be demonstrated, but we may hope. Allow me to present Sir Byron, Sir Morgarth, and Sir Shadrick. Sirs, the Lady Elaine, my natural and very clever daughter, with whom I must needs confer, if you would be so good as to excuse us."
The three knights bowed and withdrew, though the tall one with the blonde hair kissed her hand before taking his leave.
"Hedge knights?" said Elaine, when the door had closed. "Hungry knights. I thought it best that we have a few more swords about us. The times grow ever more interesting, my sweet, and when the times are interesting, you can never have too many swords. The Merlin kings returned to Gulltown, and old Oswald has some tales to tell."
She knew better than to ask what sort of tales. If Peter had wanted her to know, he would have told her.
I did not expect you to come back so soon," she said. "I am glad you've come."
"I would never have known it from the kiss you gave me."
He pulled her closer, caught her face between his hands, and kissed her on the lips for a long time.
"Now, that's a sort of kiss that says, welcome home. See that you do better next time."
"Yes, father."
She could feel herself blushing. He did not hold her kiss against her.
"You would not believe half as what is happening in King's Landing, sweetling. Cersei stumbles from one idiocy to the next, helped along by her counsel of the deaf, the dim, and the blind. I always anticipated that she would beggar the realm and destroy herself, but I never expected she would do it quite so fast. It's quite vexing. I had hoped to have 4 or 5 quiet years to plant some seeds and allow some fruits to ripen, but now, it's a good thing that I thrive on chaos. What little peace and order the 5 kings left us will not long survive the 3 queens, I fear.
The 3 queens? She did not understand.
Nor did Peter choose to explain. Instead, he smiled and said, "I've brought my sweet girl back a gift."
Elaine was as pleased as she was surprised. "Is it a gown?" She had heard there were fine seamstresses in Gulltown, and she was so tired of dressing drably.
"Something better. Guess again."
"Jewels?"
"No jewels could hope to match my daughter's eyes."
"Lemons. Did you find some lemons?" She had promised Sweet Robin lemon cake, and for lemon cake you needed lemons.
Peter Baelish took her by the hand and drew her down onto his lap. "I've made a marriage contract for you."
"A marriage?" Her throat tightened. She did not want to wed again. Not now. Perhaps not ever. I cannot marry, Father.
Elaine looked at the door to make certain it was closed.
"I am married," she whispered. "You know."
Peter put a finger to her lips to silence her. "The dwarf wed Ned Stark's daughter, not mine. Be that as it may, this is only a betrothal. The marriage must needs wait until Cersei is done and Sansa's safely widowed. And you must meet the boy and win his approval. Lady Waynewood would not make him marry against his will. She was quite firm on that."
"Lady Waynewood?" Elaine could hardly believe it. "Why would she marry one of her sons to a
bastard?" "Well, for a start, you are the Lord Protector's bastard, never forget. The Waynewoods are very old and very proud, but not as rich as one might think, as I discovered when I began buying up their debt. Not that Lady Anya would ever sell a son for gold. A ward, however. Young Harry's only a cousin, and the dower that I offered her ladyship was even larger than the one that Lionel Corbury just collected. It had to be, for her to risk Brunzion's wrath. This will put all his plans awry. You are promised to Harold Harding, sweetling, provided you can win his boyish heart, which should not be hard for you."
"Harry the heir?" Elaine tried to recall what Miranda had told her about him on the mountain. "He was just knighted, and he has a bastard daughter by some common girl,
and another on the way by a different wench. Harry can be a beguiling one, no doubt. Soft sandy hair, deep blue eyes, and dimples when he smiles, and very gallant, I'm told." He teased her with a smile. "Bastard born or no, sweetling, when this match is announced, you will be the envy of every high-born maiden in the Vale, and a few from the Riverlands, and the Reach as well."
"Why?"
Elaine was lost.
"Is Sir Harold, how could he be Lady Waynewood's heir? Doesn't she have sons of her own blood?"
3, Peter allowed. She could smell the wine on his breath, the cloves and nutmeg. "Daughters too, and grandsons."
"But won't they come before Harry? I don't understand."
"You will. Listen." Peter took her hand in his own and brushed his finger lightly down the inside of her palm. "Lord Jasper Aaron, begin with him. John Aaron's father. He begot 3 children, 2 sons and a daughter. John was the eldest, so the heir and the lordship passed to him. His sister, Alice, wed Sir Ellis Waynewood, uncle to the present Lady Waynewood." He made a wry face. "Ellis and Alice. Isn't that precious? Lord Jasper's younger son, Sir Ronald Aaron, wed a Belmore girl, but only rang her once or twice before dying of a bad belly. Their son, Albert, was being born in one bed, even as poor Ronald was dying in another down the hall." "Are you paying close attention, sweetling?"
Yes, there was John and Alice and Ronald, but Ronald died.
Good, now. John Aaron married thrice, but his first two wives gave him no children, so for long years his nephew, Albert, was his heir. Meantime, Ellis was ploughing Alice quite dutifully, and she was whelping once a year. She gave him 9 children, 8 girls, and 1 precious little boy, another Jasper, after which she died, exhausted. Boy Jasper, inconsiderate of the heroic efforts that had gone into begetting him, got himself kicked in the head by a horse when he was 3 years old. A pox took 2 of his sisters soon after, leaving 6. The eldest married Sir Dennis Aaron, a distant cousin to the Lords of the Eyrie. There are several branches of House Aaron scattered across the vale, all as proud as they are penurious, save for the Gultan Aarons, who had the rare good sense to marry merchants. They're rich, but less than couth, so no one talks about them. Sir Dennis hailed from one of the poor, proud branches, but he was a renowned jouster, handsome and gallant and brimming with courtesy, and he had that magic Aaron name, which made him ideal for the eldest Wainwood girl. Their children would be Aarons, and the next heirs to the Vale should any ill befall Albert. Well, as it happened, Mad King Aerys befell Albert. You know that story?
She did. The Mad King murdered him.
He did indeed, and soon after, Sir Dennis left his pregnant Wainwood wife to ride to war. He died during the Battle of the Bells of an excess of gallantry and an axe. When they told his lady of his death, she perished of grief, and her newborn son soon followed. No matter, John Aaron had gotten himself a young wife during the war, one he had reason to believe fertile. He was very hopeful, I'm sure, but you and I know that all he ever got from Lysa was stillbirths, miscarriages, and poor sweet Robin. Which brings us back to the 5 remaining daughters of Ellis and Alice. The eldest had been left terribly scarred by the same pox that killed her sisters, so she became a scepter. Another was seduced by a sellsword. Sir Ellis cast her out, and she joined the Silent Sisters after her bastard died in infancy. The third wed the Lord of the Paps, but proved barren. The fourth was on her way to the Riverlands to marry some bracken when Burnman carried her off. That left the youngest, who wed a landed knight sworn to the Wainwoods, gave him a son that she named Harold, and perished. He turned her hand over and lightly kissed her wrist. "So, tell me, sweetling, why is Harry the heir?"
Her eyes widened.
"He is not Lady Wainwood's heir, he's Robert's heir. If Robert were to die..."
Peter arched an eyebrow.
"When Robert dies, our poor brave sweet Robin is such a sickly boy, it's only a matter of time. When Robert dies, Harry the heir becomes Lord Harold, Defender of the Vale, and Lord of the Eyrie. John Aaron's bannermen will never love me, nor our silly, shaking Robert, but they will love the young falcon. And when they come together for his wedding, and you come out with your long auburn hair, clad in a maiden's cloak of white and grey, with a dire-wolf emblazoned on the back, why, every knight in the Vale will pledge his sword to win you back your birthright. So those are your gifts for me, my sweet Sansa. Harry the Eyrie and Winterfell. That's worth another kiss now, don't you think?"